Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with a banger episode today, guys. Last time we talked, we were previewing SummerSlam, we were previewing Abu Dhabi, talking about new UFC fights, and now we are back again to recap SummerSlam. It was absolutely amazing. And recap UFC Abu Dhabi, where a lot of stuff happened. That'll be the main event of today's episode, recapping all the action from Abu Dhabi, where we did go 10-3 on predictions and go 6-0 on the make guard. We are now plus 70 on the year for predictions, 194 compared to 124, correct to incorrect. So that's very exciting. Also on today's episode, 10 new things in the pop culture world, the movie, TV show world, lots of fun stuff there, including a bunch of new UFC fights. Going to be covering that in a second. And your surprise topic for today's episode, how about the new NFL top 100 players before 2024? As voted by the players themselves. So we're going to look at all 100 players, see who the actual players of the game that we watch in the NFL think are the 100 best athletes in the NFL. A lot of fun stuff today. It is pouring rain here in Minnesota right now, and all across the state I'm seeing a bunch of thunderstorms warnings, but we're going to be bringing the lightning, we're going to be bringing the thunder to today's episode. Episode 108. I don't even know, what's our next milestone? 150? We'll get around to it eventually, and I'll tell you what else we're going to be getting around to eventually, and that is the rest of the UFC pay-per-views to end the year. We, of course, know that UFC 305 is going down in less than 2 weeks, honestly, in Perth, Australia, Western Australia, that is. UFC 306 will be at the Sphere. UFC Noche in Las Vegas. UFC 307 rumored for Utah. Main event still a mystery, but we do have some new fights for that, and UFC 308 going down in the end of October in Abu Dhabi, just announced their entire main card. It is absolutely amazing. Let's get into some of the new fights that Dana White has blessed us with. So first off, in reference to that UFC 307 card, where the main event, there is a rumor going around an interim lightweight title shot between Armin Sarukian and Charles Oliveira may be taking place. Just a rumor at the moment. We'll see if there's any validity to it as we continue on. But an official fight for UFC 307 going down October 5th, Jose Aldo, your number 8 ranked bantamweight, will be taking on the number 12 ranked Mario Bautista. This is a very interesting fight. This is a very interesting fight, if you ask me, because we just watched Jose Aldo return, dominate Jonathan Martinez. He was even landing takedowns on Jonathan Martinez and return to the top 15 after taking a 2-year hiatus. Now, Jose Aldo will return for his second fight of 2024 as he takes on Mario Bautista, who is 14-2 professionally, 8-2 in the UFC, on a 6-fight win streak, coming off his biggest win over Ricky Simone. I am very excited to see what Mario Bautista brings to the table. This guy's all action, a very good grappler. Grappling is where he really shines. He is good at striking. So we'll have to see. This is one of those fights where I feel like it's kind of like Jose Aldo's been able to shed off any up-and-comer that's came at him. I mean, Rob Font, Marlon Vera, Pedro Munhoz, now Jonathan Martinez. It's really tough to see Mario Bautista beating him, but Mario just beat Ricky Simone, biggest fight of his UFC tenure so far. So we'll have to see what he does with that, but that's an exciting fight for the October 5th card. And I really wonder what else will be on the main card for that, because this has to be on the main card. Jose Aldo will definitely be on the main card. A fight which is surprisingly not going to be on the main card and is actually a retirement fight. Your former UFC women's strawweight champion, Carla Esparza, will return after 2 years off in her retirement fight to take on Tisha Pennington. Carla Esparza, 9-5 in the UFC, 18-7 professionally. I mean, won the belt. She actually won the Ultimate Fighter Season 20. You know, she holds wins over Rose Namajunas, Marina Rodriguez, Michelle Washington Gomez. Carla Esparza, a fun, fun fighter. And her opponent, Tisha Pennington, of course, the wife of current women's bantamweight champion Raquel Pennington. Tisha is 13-7 professionally, 9-7 in the UFC. She also holds a win over Rose Namajunas and Michelle Washington Gomez, and holds a win over Angela Hill. It should be a presumably retirement fight for Carla, as she's saying. And it's kind of good when you get to hang it up on your own terms. She was never really able to fight again after losing to Zhang Wei Li. So we'll see how she performs. I hope she does good. I'll probably pick her to win that matchup. Another fight for that October 5th card. I mean, this is your title fight right here at Women's Bantamweight. The number 2 ranked Ketlyn Vieira, coming off of a win over, did she even win her last fight? I mean, was it over Holly Holmes? I think she might have lost her last fight, but I don't even know. She takes on the number three ranked Kayla Harrison, who just dominated Holly Holmes, submitted her at UFC 300. And I mean, she also holds wins over Larissa Pacheco, one of the best women in the PFL, and Aspen Ladd. How about that? Former UFC fighter who went to the PFL. Kayla Harrison, future women's bantamweight champion. I'm excited to see her get back in the octagon. And UFC 307 is being loaded up, so I hate to say they're going to shove this on the prelims, but by the way it's looking, it's probably going to be on the prelims. But don't fret, because Kayla Harrison will soon be fighting in the co-main event of a card, maybe even the main event of a fight night for the women's bantamweight championship. I'm excited to see that. Let's kick off our UFC 308 fights, because we're going to start off with a very chill one here. The number 14th ranked heavyweight, Marcos Rogério de Lima. Of course, you know, he's beaten Waldo Cortez Acosta, Andre Arlovski. Now he's also been knocked out by Derek Lewis, but he's back in action. He takes on Kenny Inchukani, who's moving up from light heavyweight. And this guy holds wins over Carlos Ulberg, Ian Kulabe, Devin Clark. He also has gotten knocked out by Dustin Jacoby. He's gotten knocked out by Alonzo Menifield. I mean, this guy is a hit or miss. I'll be interesting to see how he does at heavyweight. But nonetheless, he's moving up. That's a good fight to have on the prelims. Now, as for the main event, it's official. Dana White said it himself. The undefeated featherweight champion, Ito Piura, 15-0, 7-0 in the UFC, will defend against the greatest featherweight fighter, one of the top 10 greatest UFC fighters of all time, Max Blessed Holloway. Max coming off a nasty knockout of Justin Gaethje. And before that, by the way, crazy knockout of the Korean Zombie. Big win over Arnold Allen. Also has wins over Calvin Kattar, Yair Rodriguez. Anyone not named Dustin Poirier or Alexander Volkanovski has not beaten this guy since, I think, 2013. Okay, I mean, come on. Absolutely ridiculous. Ito Piura coming off the greatest win of his career, knocking out Alexander Volkanovski in round number two. And this will be a really telling matchup right here, because Ito Piura, I've never seen someone more confident in their abilities and being able to execute. Okay, he's just done a phenomenal job. And jumping from Bryce Mitchell to Josh Emmett to Alexander Volkanovski is so big, and he's looked better with every performance. This will be the toughest fight of his career against Max Holloway, but I think he gets it done. This is a deserved main event. It's a shame we don't get it in Spain at some, you know, like Etihad Arena, something like huge soccer stadium, but hey, I'll take it nonetheless. Another fight, I mean, I don't really know what the co-main event's going to be. Actually, I do. So this fight's probably going to be your third or fourth on the main card. Actually, I should say your first, second, or third on the main card. The number two ranked heavyweight, Ciryl Gane, will rematch number three ranked Alexander Volkov 3 years after their main event. They will be on the main card of UFC 308. Ciryl Gane coming off a win over Sergey Spivak last September. He hasn't gotten a matchup. I've heard he's ducked Tom Aspinall. I've heard he's ducked Sergey Pavlovich. I've heard he's ducked Halton Almeida. I've heard Ciryl Gane's been kind of picky choosy when it comes to opponents, but he's run into an old foe against Alexander Volkov, who's coming off a big win over Sergey Pavlovich. He's also beaten Tai Tuivasa, what's-his-face, who's that grappler, Alexander Romanov. I mean, Volkov, he's on a four-fight winning streak. All of them finishes except the Pavlovich fight. I'm excited for this one. And Ciryl Gane, I mean, interesting nonetheless, Ciryl Gane's only losses are to your last two heavyweight champions, undisputed heavyweight champions, John Jones and Francis Ngannou. Those have been the only men to beat him. That's saying a lot. So, exciting stuff there. I hate to see a rematch like this, but I mean, it's been 3 years. I've seen worse rematches. The co-main event, which I completely forgot this was going to be the co-main event. 5 rounds. They're going to try and do it again. The number three ranked middleweight will take on the number 11 middleweight, Khamzat Chimaev versus Robert Whittaker. Robert the Reaper Whittaker now ranked number three after his round one knockout of Ikram Makhachev. As for Khamzat Chimaev, you know, his last win was over Kamaru Usman a year ago. I don't know what to expect. I feel like the Reaper, Robert Whittaker, has gotten better. But at the same time, everyone who's beaten Robert Whittaker in the last, I mean, decade has gone on to win the middleweight championship. Jiskus Duplessis, Israel Adesanya. I'll be interested to see how Khamzat Chimaev does. This is grappling versus striking, and Whittaker's grappling has not really been tested at all, and this will be the greatest test that Khamzat Chimaev will face for striking. So hopefully this can happen, but if Khamzat Chimaev pulls out here, you can't really cut him. You know, he's so marketable. You know, people will tune in. But it's almost like, I don't know what you do with a guy when he keeps getting injured, when he keeps pulling out. I mean, he's been the one that's pulled out of all of his fights. So I don't really know what to think about Khamzat Chimaev, but hopefully that fight does occur. A very interesting one going down on the main card, light heavyweight division. This could be a fight night main event. The number two ranked light heavyweight in the world, the unofficial number one contender, Magomed Ankalaev, will be taking on Alexander Rakic, ranked number five in the UFC lightweight division, light heavyweight division. Magomed 19-1 professionally with one drawn, one no contest. He is on a 10-fight winning streak, 11-fight unbeaten streak. It has been absolutely incredible. I mean, most recently, KO'd Johnny Walker in January. Before that, I mean, the wins over Anthony Smith, the draw against Jan Blachowicz, the win over Volkan Ozdemir, knocking out Ion Cutelaba, beating Thiago Santos. Magomed Ankalaev has been on a run. I'm very surprised he didn't get the title shot. I won't lie to you guys. I think that the UFC is trying to set up Adesanya versus Pereira 3, a trilogy in the UFC. Because Magomed, he's taken on Rakic. Rakic has one fight in the last 2 years, and it was a loss at UFC 300 to Jiří Procházka. Now, mind you, his wins over Thiago Santos and Anthony Smith, they were good at the time, but now haven't aged the best. He's now 6-3 in the UFC. It's tough to see what'll happen from this fight, but I definitely think Magomed gets it done. He is the man who I will be riding with. And one more fight announced for UFC 308 going down in Abu Dhabi, October 26th. The number 10 ranked welterweight in the world will take on the number 14th ranked lightweight, Jeff Neal versus Rafael Dos Anjos. How does Rafael keep getting all of these high profile fights? I mean, Dos Anjos look legend of the game. I mean, former UFC lightweight champion. He's had almost 10 performance bonuses over his career. I mean, UFC fights alone, 35 UFC fights of his 48 professional bouts. But, I mean, as of late, knocked out by Rafael Fiziev. He's been beaten by Matheus Gamrot. He's been... Who else has he lost to? Vicente Luque. I mean, his only wins are over Brian Barberina and Paul Felder. I mean, I think that's legit it. I mean, and Jeff Neal. You know, I'm not saying too much about Jeff Neal. You know, he's kind of got the short end of the stick having to fight Shavkat Rakhmonov, Ian Gary. They've been feeding him the killers. So this will be interesting. Grappling for Dos Anjos, striking for Jeff Neal. I'll be interested to see what happens. And we'll talk about two more. The first of those last two, UFC Vegas 99 going down October 19th at the UFC Apex. The number 9 ranked Rob Font will take on the newly ranked number 11th, Kyler Phillips. Absolutely love Kyler Phillips. Coming off a huge win over Pedro Munhoz. Actually holds win over Song Yadong. That win has aged well. We'll be taking on Rob Font. Rob Font, unfortunately, lost his last bout to, who did Rob Font lose to? I honestly can't remember. Rob Font just had a matchup and lost it, and I'm trying to think live on air right now who it was against, but it is eluding my mind. It is eluding my mind. I'm determined right now to think of it. Deiveson Figueiredo. There it is. He lost to Deiveson Figueiredo in December. I knew it would come to me. But I mean, this guy, he holds wins over Cody Garbrandt, Adrian Yanez, Sergio Pettis. He's legit as they come. This is going to be a striking battle through and through. I'm excited to see it, but I will probably ride with Kyler Phillips. And the final fight, which is kind of a sad one to announce, UFC Vegas 97 going down on September 7th. Calvin Kattar has unfortunately pulled out of his fight against the unranked Kyle Nelson due to injury. In will step Steve Mean Machine Garcia Jr., coming off a big knockout of Sungwoo Choi. This guy's an absolute killer. 4-fight winning streak. I think they're all knockouts. Steve Mean Machine Garcia, step in, take this opportunity. And Kyle Nelson, coming off a round one TKO of Bill Algeo. I'll be very excited to see what both of these guys bring to the table. But I mean, I rock with both of them. Honestly, I probably rock with Mean Machine more. Okay, probably ride with Mean Machine more. But, yeah, interesting stuff all around. It should be a good bunch of fights to round out the rest of the year. But UFC 308, I think, is the big one that everyone's kind of got their eyes on. Like, ooh, look at that. Look at all the big, shiny fights on UFC 308. So, That's all we got for a new UFC fight. Still a mystery about the UFC 307 main event. But I'll tell you what is not a mystery anymore, guys, and that is the NFL Top 100. So every year, the players vote on who they think are the top 100 players in the NFL. I mean, it's a huge process. A lot of statistics are involved. They average them all out. And over the course of the last 2 to 3 weeks, the NFL has slowly been releasing the results on their Instagram. It's been exciting to see, you know, who's in the top 50, who's in the top, I mean, even in the top 100 is pretty good until we finally got down to the top 10. It's very interesting to see who they think the number one player in the league is. So what we're going to do, we're going to break down all the 100 players as fast as we can, try not to take too much time. But just kind of interesting to see who all the players vote as the best. So first off, Zaire Franklin coming in as the 100th best player. He is a defensive player from the Colts. I don't really recognize his name. He was not ranked in the 2023 rankings, but he's made his way into the top 100. So good job to Zaire Franklin. Coming in at 99, of course, the middle linebacker from the Buccaneers, Lavonte David. He was also not ranked in 2023, but hey, number 99, pretty good. You're not 100. You're not last in this. You are number 99. Good job to Lavonte David. Another defensive player for you. He was previously 45 in the 2023 rankings. Cam Hayward of the Steelers is now number 98. They should have done him at 97. That's his number he plays at. But hey, good to see a Steelers player in the top 100. How about that, Seth, my roommate, lifelong Steelers fan. Checking in at 97, a three-spot drop back from his 2023 ranking at 94. Terry McLaurin, Commanders wide receiver, and I think Scary Terry has just gotten the unluckiness of the draw, having Sam Howell as a quarterback, having Jacoby Brissett, you know, having to deal with his whole variety of quarterbacks. He now has Jaden McDaniels. It's tough to see what'll happen to Scary Terry, but he's still a good wide receiver and a good addition to the Commanders. Checking in at 96, Deion Dawkins of the Buffalo Bills. He was not ranked in 2023. Number 95, Julian Love of the Seahawks. He was also not ranked in 2023. Number 94, a two-spot plus from his number 96 spot in 2023, Trevor Lawrence, quarterback for the Jaguars. He's been paid a lot of money. There's a lot of hype around him. Trevor Lawrence has yet to produce really anything. I mean, Blake Bortles produced more, leading the Jaguars to the Eastern, the AFC Championship game? I think that was in 2018, maybe? Trevor Lawrence has all the tools. He's got Travis Etienne out there. He's got Calvin Ridley. He's got so many tools on offense. Evan Ingram, even. A couple of other wide receivers are escaping my mind, but I mean, he really has got to produce there, okay? Coming in at 93, he was 97 last year. My favorite strong safety, my favorite cornerback in the game, Harrison Smith. I mean, that boy is always deep. He always got to watch out for him. He is so fun. He's so feisty. And, he's old now. He's coming to an end. It's happy to see Harrison Smith. I still have his jersey. I need a new jersey, though, Harrison. My jersey's fallen apart. I've had it for so many years. To see you in the NFL. So happy for you, Harrison Smith. NFL Top 100. A crazy drop back here. He was number 51 last year. He checks in at number 92. The former Super Bowl champion, now the quarterback of the New York Jets, Aaron Rodgers. We'll see how he does. We'll see how he does returning from injury. He has a lot to prove. 92, I actually rock with this. You know, he was supposed to be the middle of the pack last year for the top 100. Got hurt not even two plays into the season. We'll see how he does this year. At number 91, Rick Woolen, R-I-Q Woolen. He was 76 last year. He's 91 this year of the Seattle Seahawks. Name does not really ring a bell, Rick. I'm so sorry, but that is a cool way to spell Rick. I'll give you that. Checking in at number 90, he was number 100 last year, a little 10-spot jump. One of my favorite wide receivers, my personal favorite wide receiver on the Eagles, Devontae Smith. Dude, this Alabama, the Crimson Tide boy, I love Devontae Smith. He is so underrated on fantasy. When A.J. Brown is having an off game, Devontae is on. Love you, Devontae Smith. I'd rate him higher, honestly. I'd rate him higher. 16-spot drop back at number 89 for Buda Baker, who was 73 last year. Cardinals, just pray. Just pray you can win 10 games this year. That's even a lot. Checking in at number 88. He was 87 last year. I believe he is an offensive guard. Chris Lindstrom for the Falcons. How about that, Falcons? Getting a little player on there. Number 87, he was 48 last year. Hassan Reddick of the New York Jets now was previously on the Eagles last season. Yeah, that's kind of tough, dropping back 39 spots. Yikes. Checking in at 86 with a 55-spot drop back, the new Eagles running back, Saquon Barkley. Yeah, Saquon did not produce. He did not produce at all with the Giants. And honestly, I don't think he's going to be that insane with the Eagles. You have to remember, when you're on the goal line, they're not punching it in with Saquon. They're punching it in with, what's his freaking face? Jalen Hurts. So Saquon, you're going to hope for those big runs. You're going to hope for those little catch and runs. Fantasy owners, beware. Checking in at 85 with a 13-spot jump from 98 last season. Tristan Wirfs of the Buccaneers. How about that? A little more offensive love. Offensive love. Unless he's on the defensive line. I don't really know these players that well. At number 84, I don't know how he wasn't ranked in 2023, DK Metcalf, wide receiver for the Seahawks. Love me a little, DK. Geno will probably be throwing to you again, but we'll see. How about that? Happy to see you here. At number 83 with a 53-spot drop back. He was 30 last year. He's 83 this year. Derwin James of the Chargers. I don't blame you. I don't blame you players voting on this. The Chargers are in just a tumultuous spot. I don't even know what to think if you're a Chargers fan right now. Derwin, you're still good. You're 83 out of the 100 players voted in the league, but you were 30 last year, so expectations kind of dropped. Wasn't in there last year, but boy, he'll be in there this year. Number 82, Montez Sweat of the Chicago Bears. Bro, he's scary. He's scary. He'll sack your quarterback and he'll take your girl, okay? And I didn't want to say girl. I wanted to say the word for a female dog. At number 81, my new enemy, who I secretly still love. He was 42 last year. Good. Send him back. Kirk Cousins, now on the Atlanta Falcons. Look, I'm sorry, Kirk. You were great. I love you. You were an amazing human being. Kirk, go chains forever. But you left us. So now we're J.J. McCarthy. Now we're Sam Darnold. We're no longer Kirk Cousins. But hey, Kirk, you're still in the top 100. I know for a fact Bryce Young isn't. Just saying. Just saying. Hey, no hate on Bryce Young. Okay, we still show love to even the lesser players in the league. Coming in at 80, he was not ranked last year, but he's in here this year. My favorite tight end. Honestly, I'm telling you, my favorite tight end, Sam Laporta. And honestly, I'm a diehard Vikings fan. I hate the Packers, but the Lions, they're kind of hard to hate. The Lions are a fun, frisky team. A lot of young guys, they're hungry, and none better than my favorite waiver wire pickup of the entire season last year. I did not get Kyren Williams or Puka. I'll throw that in there. Sam Laporta. Absolutely love Sam Laporta. And number 79 with a 61-spot drop back from 18 last year, Minka Fitzpatrick of the Pittsburgh Steelers. How's that feel, Seth? Wow, Minka Fitzpatrick was in the top 20. He doesn't even crack the top 75. That's unfortunate. Minka, still an amazing player. At number 78, speaking of the man, Kyren Williams, running back for the Rams. He's going to have a great sophomore season. I can tell you that. One of the best rookies last year. Holy cow. Kyren Williams just exploded onto the scene. I'll be excited to see what he produces with this new Rams offense. Trey Hendrickson, he was 75 last year, he's 77 this year. I already know that he is a defensive player for the Bengals. He's a dog, he's a killer, and he's just a humble little white boy. Actually, a big white boy. 79 last year, 76 this year, Dre Greenlaw of the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, we know, Dre. You're good. Defense is good. 49ers, they get it done. Here we go. He was 32 last year. He's 75 this year. Justin Herbert. Now, honestly, I know he didn't do too good last year. He had some off games, but I actually became a fan of Justin Herbert last season. He really gave it his all. He tried his best. This Chargers team just... when you're throwing to what's his freaking face, who's, was he sitting number 17, who drops all of his balls, Quentin Johnson. I mean, there's not much you can do. And you lose Keenan Allen. You don't got many options now. Justin Herbert will have to work with what he's got. And what does he have? Joe Alt. Good lineman. So, hey, no one's going to be getting... No one's going to be sacking you. You got to find the positives, Justin. There you go. Number 74 somehow wasn't in the 2023 rankings. Jesse Bates III, amazing cornerback from the Falcons. Love that pick right there. Number 73, Jeffrey Simmons of the Tennessee Titans. He was 58 last year. It's a little 15-spot drop back. At 72, he was 74 last year. Somehow has moved up two spots. Garrett Wilson, wide receiver for the Jets. He was supposed to be top dog last year with Aaron Rodgers, went way too high in fantasy drafts. And when you have Zach Wilson throwing to you, when you got Mike White throwing to you, there's not much you can do. Garrett, I really hope you can succeed because you are an amazing wide receiver. checking in at number 71. He was 85 last year. He's jumping up in the rankings. Laramie Tunsil. I mean, this Texans dog, he's just a dog. Laramie Tunsil, absolutely love him. I know you say, oh, he's a dog. That's so simple for you to say of them. But no, he honestly is. I rock with Laramie Tunsil. I find him as one of the better linemen in the game of some regard. And, I wish nothing but the best for you. I wish nothing but the best. Gosh, what was that? 70, was that 71 right there? 71, that number 70, Amari Cooper. It's kind of hard. The NFL posted this in so many different segments. I've been trying to find them on their page. And I just realized the NFL posts a lot of stuff on their social media. But going to 70, Amari Cooper wasn't ranked in 2023. Amari Cooper, welcome back. You should ball out. You should ball out this year. At number 69, it's fitting, Cooper Kupp. He was 47 last year, kind of got outshone by Puka Nacua, but Cooper Kupp, legendary wide receiver, always repping the white boys. He's got a big beard now, too. At number 68, wasn't on there last year. Such a shame to lose this man. Danielle Hunter, now on the Texans. Yeah, and we have to play him, too. Watch out, J.J. McCarthy. Danielle Hunter will be coming for you. Terron Armstead of the Miami Dolphins. Lineman jumps from 83 to 67. Good jump, man. Dolphins, they'll be dangerous this year. And number 66 was not in there last year. I can't believe that this guy is probably the number 3 or number 4 option on his team. Brandon Ayuk. I mean, this guy is the essential. I mean, people talking about T. Higgins being like the outshone by Jamar Chase. Nah, Brandon Ayuk has to deal with Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. What's his face? Who's the tight end? Why is his name eluding me? George Kittle. And I mean, Brandon Ayuk still is an amazing wide receiver. And I love this spot at number 66. At number 65, dropping back from his 57 spot last year, Jordan Poyer, who was on the Buffalo Bills, now on the Miami Dolphins. I mean, Miami Dolphins are stocking up their team. It's incredible. At number 64, former Baltimore Raven, now Pittsburgh Steeler, who joined a rival team, Patrick Queen, wasn't ranked in 2023. Hey, Steelers, got a lot of defensive players up here. Pretty nice. At number 63, he was 44 last year, so a huge drop-off. Jalen Waddle. It's hard, Jalen. Jalen Waddle is an amazing wide receiver, but Tyreek is just so good. So good, and he really gets outshone by how good Tyreek is, but Jalen Waddle still in the top 50. Another Miami Dolphin at number 62, Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb fitting in perfectly with this defense. Yeah, he's the Chubbsters. And at number 61, Justin Madubuike, defensive end. I believe he is on the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, hey, Baltimore, get your guys in there. Love to see it. And number 60, another Miami Dolphin, Raheem Mostert, proving age is just a number. Raheem Mostert, still, I think, running back one, even with Devin Achane in the backfield. I don't know what the decision will be, but still a dog. And number 59, jumping 3 spots from last year when he was at 62, Bobby Wagner, going from the Seahawks to the Commanders. Hey, Commanders, they need anything they can get. Worst defense in the league last year, but now you got Bobby Wagner. He's a great middle linebacker. And number 58, he was 81 last year, but now Christian Wilkins, former Miami Dolphin, is on the Las Vegas Raiders. He's looking to turn that defense around. I'm here for it, Christian. And number 57, Justin Simmons, who was 59 last year, he's 57 this year. Currently does not have a team, was on the Broncos, currently is not signed with anyone, but the players still think he's number 57, pretty similar to a spot last year. Here's a crazy one for you. Here is a really crazy one for you. At number 56, he was 16 last year, a 40-spot drop back, Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs did not live up to expectations with the Bills. I don't know why. He's decided to join this overpowered Texans team. Fantasy owners, beware. C.J. Stroud can only throw to so many people every single play. Okay, Stephon Diggs, still super talented, kind of a diva, should never have left Minnesota, but at the same time, we got Justin Jefferson, so that's your loss, Stephon. At number 55, Brian Burns, shockingly going from the Panthers to the Giants. He saw that as an upgrade. He was 54 last year, so you went back one spot, Brian. Technically, you deprogressed in the NFL player's mind. Just saying. Same thing goes for Jonathan Allen at number 54. He was 52 last year, so jumping back two spots. And number 53, probably the best center in the game, Zach Martin of the Dallas Cowboys at number 53. He was 68 last year, 15-spot jump. Zach Martin, don't know how many years he's got left, but he wants that Super Bowl, man. He's fighting for it. 3-spot drop back from last year at number 52, Patrick Surtain II, Broncos player up here. Pretty shocking. At number 51, newly minted Chicago Bear. He wasn't even in the top 100 last year, Keenan Allen. He did pretty good with the Chargers, I'll say, too, but he had enough of Los Angeles. He wants a little bit of that Chicago weather, and Chicago's pretty nice. Never been to L.A., but Chicago's nice. I wish you the best, Keenan, even though I'll have to play it twice during the season. At number 50, a Green Bay Packer, Rashawn Gray. Number 52, definitely on defense. Good for him. At number 49, he was 25 last year. He's 49 this year, Derrick Henry. Going from the Titans to the Ravens, we'll see how it works out for him. But Derrick Henry did need to make a career switch. Legendary time with the Titans, but yeah, he fits in pretty well with what the Ravens are looking for, especially at the moment. At number 48, jumping up 14 spots from last year. Actually, 16 spots, I think it was. Actually, 66 to 48, an 18-spot jump. Wow, Jared Goff now in the top 50. Love to see it. He's leading the Lions, man. He's leading the Lions, and he's leading the Lions offense, I should say, because number 47, making a 41-spot jump from 2023, Aiden Hutchinson, one of the best defensive ends in the league. Come on. Come on, guys. When Aiden Hutchinson is rushing at you, it's game over. Okay, love that guy, even though he's on the Lions, divisional rival. Antoine Winfield at number 46. Love you, former Minnesotan Gopher. Minnesota Gopher. Love my Minnesota boys. Making a little 6-spot jump backwards. Jamar Chase was 39 last year, 45 this year. No hate to Jamar, but Bengals kind of sucked last year. Joey Scheisty, Joe Burrow needs to get his stuff together, if you know what I mean. DeMario Davis, he was 43 last year. He's 44 this year. Great player on the St. Paul Saints. That's our AAA baseball team, the New Orleans Saints. And you know what? He's an outspoken man about Christ. So I love you, DeMario. At number 43, Kyle Hamilton of the Ravens. He's good, guys. Kyle Hamilton is good. He's as legit as promised. Man, be careful. Be careful in your backfield with Kyle Hamilton back there. And number 42 wasn't even on the radar in 2023, but Matthew Stafford back in the top 50. He's at 42. Hey, he's a veteran. You know, his years are numbered, but you got Kyren Williams, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp. You got the tools. Put it together, Matthew. And at number 41, he was 41 last year. Son of a gun, the first player to land at the exact same spot 2 years in a row. Lane Johnson of the Eagles. It's just, you know, Aussie, Lane Johnson beat at 41 both years in a row is probably the least surprising thing that I've seen today. That just works for me. That just works. An unfortunate jump backwards. He was 13 last year. He's 40 this year. Davante Adams. This is not Devontae's fault. Davante is so freaking good. He just had a terrible Raiders team this year. But you know what? Bringing in some rookies, the new head coach is going to have his full season to himself to work on what he can. Davante, you can end as one of the top 3 wide receivers in fantasy by year's end. And, oh my gosh, this is a big one too, guys. He was 6 last year. He's 39 this year. The newly short hair bleached Joe Burrow. Okay, that's brutal. From 6 to 39, Joe, you have a lot to prove. You've dropped kind of a lot since that Super Bowl season. Not a lot of people have been to a Super Bowl. If you're Joe, you should really want to win one. Also jumping back from 23 to 38, Sauce Gardner. And I'll say this for Sauce. When the Jets defense is out there over 50 to 60% of the game, you're going to eventually give up stuff. But Sauce Gardner is super talented. He's an American patriot. He loves to dap up Aaron Rodgers. Sauce Gardner, he'll be back to form soon. Making a 3-spot jump this year, Quinnen Williams of the New York Jets. New York Jets getting a lot of players up here. Insane jump right here from 82 to 36. Tua Tagovailoa, breakout season last year with the Dolphins. Tua's got all the weapons. Absolutely love him for him, former Alabama QB. Tua Tagovailoa, do your thing. Wasn't even ranked last year, now at 35. Love to see it. Josh Hines Allen of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Love to see that, man. Great player on defense. And number 34 wasn't even on the top 100 last year, Jordan Love. I hate the Packers. I'll say this one thing. Jordan Love is talented. He deserves the hype, okay? Wasn't ranked last year at 33. Puka Nacua, rookie of the year. I mean, come on. Should have given it to him. Puka Nacua, actually, I believe a relative of some resort to Dana White. Puka Nacua, love him. He's incredible. He's talented, and he's humble for the time being. He also looks way older than he actually does. Checking in at 32, yet another man who wasn't ranked, Quincy Williams of the New York Jets. A lot of players prove they are dominant last season. People are believing into the hype this season. Same for number 31, which I think is highly disputed, Deron Bland. Don't get me wrong, he set the pick six record. He gave up a lot of yardage. Okay, he was not a lockdown wide receiver. He was, not wide receiver, cornerback. He wasn't a lockdown cornerback. He was just able to pick off some balls. Okay, Deron Bland, 31, that's bold. And number 30, making a 31-spot jump, Deebo Samuel. I love him in receiver. Deebo Samuel is just a good guy, and he's so talented. I mean, who else is playing wide receiver and running back the whole game? And returner, no one else but Deebo. 11-spot jump from last season, Khalil Mack at number 29. They're still believing in him. From the Chargers, Khalil Mack entering his latter stage slowly, but one of the better pieces of that Los Angeles team. At number 28, they didn't put any respect on his name last year. He wasn't even ranked, but the runner-up in the Super Bowl, Brock Purdy. Believe the hype, guys. Believe the hype. Why are you hating on Brock Purdy? Dude, he just loves to play football. He's strategic with it. Went to Iowa State. Give it to him, man. And number 27, this one is tough. Nick Bosa was 4 last year, drops back to 27. 27 still good, but you were the number 4 player last year? What happened, Nick? What happened? I'll tell you, because Mike Evans, 26 this year, was 53 last year. I mean, Mike Evans, come on. Super, super talented. It's always tough, though. You know, Baker, great, great quarterback, but you never know. Sometimes he wants to throw a mic, sometimes he doesn't. Mike Evans projected to do well this year. 11-spot jump from last season, Jalen Ramsey at 25. Love him. Dexter Lawrence of the Giants at 24. He jumps up 4 spots from last year. An incredible 43-spot jump at 23, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to have a fantastic season. He is ready to break out. I've learned so much about him from receiver. This dude's mentality is off the charts. And number 22, Penei Sewell of the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions wasn't even ranked in 2023. How about number 22 for 2024? And at number 21, making a 1-spot jump from last season, A.J. Brown is projected at number 21 for the best 100 players of the year. Personally, I'm a Devontae Smith fan, but A.J., I respect you. Here we go. At number 20, the top 20 guys, C.J. Stroud wasn't even ranked in 2023. The players said, yeah, he's the 20th best player in the league. 5-spot jump from last season, Roquan Smith of the Baltimore Ravens. Dude, he is a demon. He's a demon out there on defense. He is a scary individual when he's rushing at you. This one hurts, guys. This one hurts. He was 18 last year. He was number 2 last year. My bad. He's 18 this year, and he wears 18, Justin Jefferson. Don't let the injuries fool you. Don't let the bad quarterback situation fool you. Justin Jefferson is a absolute unit, and he's going to win Super Bowl MVP. You mark my words. He was number 9 last year. He's number 17 this year, Micah Parsons. Just some injuries, man. Just some injuries. That'll hold you back. And number 16, he was 58 last year. They gave him so much respect. Dak Prescott with a 42-spot jump. I don't know if he was the 16th best player in the league when he was getting blown out by the Packers, but Dak Prescott did lead the Cowboys to a pretty good season last year. Top 15, he was number 3 last year, so a brutal drop-off. Still in the top 15, Jalen Hurts kind of collapsed at the end of the season. Yeah, Jalen Hurts, you need to pull it together. 5-spot jump from last season, George Kittle at 14. Love him on receiver. Love him in general. George Kittle, one of the best tight ends in the game. And number 13, with a 21-spot jump, CeeDee Lamb, your number 1 wide receiver statistically last season. How about that? CeeDee Lamb rounded it off so good, finished as the number 1 wide receiver last year. And number 12, dropping back 4 spots. He was 8 last year. Josh Allen, a lot to prove with the Bills. They removed some pieces. They brought some pieces in. Josh Allen really has to prove that he wants it, that he wants to win a Super Bowl. And at number 11, he was 15 last year, Fred Warner Jr. of the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, yeah, Fred's good. You don't want to be running against him when he's out there at linebacker. So fun stuff there. And we get into our top 10, guys. Let's wrap this up at number 10, Max Crosby. Okay, he was 17 last year. This is the ultimate white boy. I think he's the white boy final boss, Max Crosby. Tattoos all over him. Got the Illuminati on his neck. Got the gold chains. Rolls his blunt and sacks your favorite quarterback, Max Crosby. Best player on the Raiders. At number 9, so overrated. He was at number 5 last year, Travis Kelce. Not even going to talk about him. Travis Kelce is a loser. We hate all Swifties. At number 8, I mean, come on. You know, come on, Seth. And I mean, the Steelers. The Steelers are pretty, pretty freaking good when it comes to players on paper. TJ Watt, he was 27 last year. He's 8 this year. probably the best defensive player in the league. TJ Watt is an animal. At number 7, Trent Williams of the San Francisco 49ers. He was 14 last year, 7-spot jump. At number 6, Chris Jones of the Kansas City Chiefs. He was 10 last year, 6 this year. At number 5, Myles Garrett, all the defensive guys. He was 20 last year, he's 5 this year. This will surprise you guys. He was number 1 last year, despite winning the Super Bowl, despite being like an MVP in the playoffs. Patrick Mahomes is at number 4. He's good, though. He's freaking good. I gotta give him his props. At number 3, they had him at 35 last year. Did him so dirty. The best running back in the league, Christian McCaffrey. 32-spot jump. Impressive. At number 2, with the biggest jump on our list, he was 72 last year. Your reigning defending MVP, Lamar Jackson. 70-spot jump is crazy. And for our number 1 player, you probably know who he is, unless you're like, oh, I'm not keeping up with all the names. Tyreek Hill was 7 last year. He's number 1 this year. And I don't know if this is just based off of what everyone saw last season compared to this season, but this is what the players think going into the new year. I mean, Tyreek Hill, Lamar Jackson, a lot to prove. It's hard to be the top dog year in, year after year. But hey, we'll see what happens. I'd take both of them in my fantasy football league. And speaking of fantasy booking, speaking of fantasies, I mean, I had an amazing time watching WWE SummerSlam, fulfilling my wrestling fantasies of watching Roman Reigns return. Son of a gun, he did it, guys. I know some people may be hesitant to watch professional wrestling. They may not think it's entertaining, but honestly, let me tell you, they put on great storylines. It's obviously fake, and it's more fun when you know it's fake, and you actually see the people doing these stunts, and you're kind of like, oh my gosh, they're actually jumping off of ladders and stuff. And obviously, it's all staged. They're actually injuring themselves. So we obviously made our predictions before or watching SummerSlam. We're going to talk about everything that went down in all of its entirety. So let's kick it all off. We had 7 matches, one little segment. Let's get it. Kicking off the evening, we had Liv Morgan defending her women's world championship against Rhea Ripley. And this was an amazing match to kick off the card. It went just under 16 minutes. It had everything you needed. I mean, two attractive ladies, Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley. The WWE knew what they were doing, booking them. And they just wrestled really well. And you had this whole angle with Dominic Mysterio. You know, he sided with Rhea Ripley, but he betrayed her at the end and sided with Liv Morgan, even making out with her after the match. I mean, oh my gosh, Rhea Ripley betrayed the Judgment Day, falling apart, the group they were in together. We're actually going to talk about the Judgment Day later on for any of my professional wrestling fans. And this was just great storytelling. This feud is far from over. I can easily see them competing past this, but I'll be interested to see the response from Rhea Ripley. Some great spots in this match. Nothing really mind-blowing. The biggest thing is that Dominic Mysterio finally sided with Liv Morgan. I honestly saw it coming. I feel like we all kind of saw this one coming, but great match. Second match of the evening was a singles match for the WWE Intercontinental Championship. Braun Breaker finally beat Sami Zayn in a 5-minute and 40-second. I wouldn't really call it a squash match. It didn't really feel like a squash match. It felt pretty even, but I don't know. Sami Zayn, just his reign needed to end. I understand he ending Gunther's reign, but he was losing his hype. People felt he should have dropped it to Chad Gable. People thought he should have lost that Money in the Bank to Braun Breaker, but Braun did what he needed to do, hit some nasty spears. He even had the Steiner brothers, his uncle, his dad, watching this. It was an amazing moment, and Braun Breaker is going to make a dominant Intercontinental Champion. And I think this feud is over. I think we're done with Sami Zayn versus Braun Breaker. I think Braun Breaker versus Braun Strowman is an amazing matchup to do there. You can have Braun fight him at 2 or 3 PLEs, win each time, continue to build up. I could see Braun Breaker holding this belt for a while because he's dominant, he's young, he's hungry, and he is great at wrestling. Good stuff there. Great booking from the WWE. Next up, we had a singles match for the WWE United States Championship, and similar to the last one, the WWE made a correct booking decision in a 12-minute match between LA Knight and Logan Paul, which actually saw Machine Gun Kelly trying to help out Logan Paul, which was very odd. LA Knight finally got it done, winning the United States Championship, and the spots in this match were absolutely amazing. Logan Paul had this backflip springboard off the top of the rope to the outside of the ring, It was absolutely amazing. It was one of the best wrestling moves that I've seen. And Logan Paul is just so athletic. He's so good with his movements in the ring. He is just a natural. Got to give him his props. I don't care if you don't like the guy outside of the ring. He is amazing in the ring. And LA Knight winning, the correct decision. There was this spot where Logan Paul, I thought, was going to win and retain, but no. LA Knight gets it done, hits his finisher, wins the belt, and it's just perfect. It works perfectly for me. I don't know who he's going to feud with personally. There's a lot of options on Friday Night SmackDown, but LA Knight's your champion. It works. 12-minute match. Beautiful. The least hyped match of the evening was Nia Jax versus Bayley for the WWE Women's Championship. And this went 12 and a half minutes. Good match here. Okay, good match. I'd honestly go as far to say that this wasn't the worst match in the night. The worst match, looking back, was probably Bron Breakker versus Sami Zayn, just because it was short. I mean, all of these were amazing. The least you could give any of these matches were probably a 7 out of 10. And this one gets a 9 out of 10. Bayley versus Nia Jax was actually entertaining. You had Miss Money in the Bank, Tiffany Stratton, actually running out, pretending like she was going to cash in. I thought Bayley was going to win at one point, but I mean, Nia Jax pulled it together, hit like a super, one of her finishers, but it was like a super version going back and back and back, and just got it done. And Nia Jax, your new WWE Women's Champion. And I actually like it. She was queen of the ring. She gets it done. And you know, you can do Nia Jax versus Bayley again. I think they might try and do Bayley versus Tiffany Stratton in a little feud, and they might do Bianca Belair or Jade Cargill versus Nia Jax. A lot of options you can do there. I'm excited to see what they go with. But Nia Jax, an actually entertained champion. Nothing compared to when she won in 2018 and tried to call out bullies. No, Nia Jax has embraced being the bully. Such a better angle for her career. With that, we got into the final three matches of the evening, and they were the three most hyped. They were the three best. These were amazing. First off, picks-wise, I forgot to mention, we called Liv Morgan retaining. We called Bron Breakker winning. We called LA Knight winning. I honestly didn't think Nia Jax was going to win, so that surprised me. And as for this result, I should have known Drew McIntyre was going to win, but as a fan of CM Punk, I kind of just was rooting for him. But Drew McIntyre defeats CM Punk in a 17-minute match with Seth Rollins as the guest referee. The entrances were on point. The storytelling was on point. I mean, the moment when they were standing in front of each other, Seth Rollins was waiting to ring the bell. The crowd was going ballistic. Seth Rollins says, "Have at it." They start punching each other. It was electric. I was just having the best time watching it, and Drew McIntyre winning, it worked. CM Punk cost himself the match, arguing with Seth Rollins, then getting caught with a freaking high kick from Drew McIntyre. Everything worked for this match. I don't know the next part, though. I don't know what they're going to do next, because it feels like Drew McIntyre versus CM Punk has ended. I almost feel like Drew McIntyre should take on Gunther at Bash at the Berlin at the end of the month, and you should have CM Punk versus Seth Rollins run that for 1, 2, 3, 4 PLEs. That, it just works. It's amazing, and this was great. It honestly felt like the months we've been building this up since WrestleMania, since we've been building this up, even before WrestleMania, we've been leading to this moment, and it paid off. Drew McIntyre winning was deserved. CM Punk losing felt like he did it to himself. And by the way, all of these guys could be in the World Heavyweight Championship title picture. They're not. CM Punk lost, and it doesn't even feel like he lost his hype, okay? Amazing stuff from all these guys. Congratulations. With that, we got into our second-to-last matchup of the evening. The World Heavyweight Championship was on the line as Damian Priest defended against Gunther in a 16-minute, 40-second match. And these two were great. The entrances were great. The crowd was loving this. Damian Priest, I really thought he was going to win at some points. Finn Balor, part of the Judgment Day, a group that he was in. Same group as Dominic Mysterio and what's-her-face, Rhea Ripley. You know, there's a moment where Gunther was kind of like, you know, looked like Damian Priest was going to lose. He was getting submitted. Finn Balor runs out. He starts hyping up Damian Priest. You know, Damian almost hits his, like, chokeslam finisher on Gunther. And then he's about to win. And then 1, 2. Oh, Gunther's foot's on the rope. What? Finn Balor beat Trace him. The official downfall of the Judgment Day. And Finn Balor was the second part of that, betraying Damian Priest. It was absolutely amazing. I will say Gunther's finisher of being a submission is very dumb. He doesn't even do a rear naked chokehold right. He makes it look so fake. I'd prefer him to do like a powerbomb as his finisher or something. But Hey, you know what it is, Gunther? Your new World Heavyweight Champion gets it done. Damian Priest versus Finn Balor is going to be an amazing feud. You can run that for one, two, or three PLEs. But Gunther, a lot of options on Monday Night Raw. I don't know who they're going to go with. They could have him rematch Finn Balor. I mean, not Finn Balor, Damian Priest. They could have him take on Drew McIntyre. I mean, a lot of options there for Gunther. But he's going to be a great World Heavyweight Champion. And it's kind of sad to see Damian Priest lose. But Gunther earned this. Gunther earned this. Damian Priest, nonetheless, still is a bunch of hype. Him versus Finn Balor is going to be an amazing feud. And this was a great pre-main event match. After that, we had a weird segment where you had The Miz and R-Truth announcing the attendance. And then Grayson Waller and Austin Theory came down. And they were, like, going at him. And they were calling out Jelly Roll. And Jelly Roll came in the ring, hits a choke slam on Austin Theory. Then him, The Miz, and R-Truth all hit a John Cena five-knuckle shuffle on Austin Theory. I've never seen someone get buried so fast. Austin Theory went from being Vince McMahon's protege to being Triple H's jobber. It's been amazing to see. And then we got to the main event, of course, guys. 29 minutes and 10 seconds of Bloodline Rules match for the undisputed WWE Championship between Cody Rhodes and Solo Sikoa of the Bloodline. And amazing. Amazing. A five-star classic. Solo Sikoa is so legit. I mean, people are hesitant. People are saying, okay, you can't really picture him as a main event guy. He can't really wrestle. This proved he can wrestle. This proved he's legit. He's got the heat. The fans hated him. And Cody Rhodes was amazing here. Cody Rhodes felt like the face of the WWE. He was the man, and just when you thought Cody Rhodes was going to win, Tamatonga and Tongaloa run out, two of the Bloodline's cronies for Solo Sikoa. Then, Kevin Owens comes out. Then, Randy Orton comes out. Then they're all fighting. Then Jacob Fatu comes out. And honestly, I thought Cody Rhodes was going to lose at one point. Jacob Fatu, unfortunately, injuring himself, doing a jump from the top rope to the outside on the announce table onto Cody Rhodes, actually hurting his foot. There's a video of him at an airport and he had it in a boot. But man, there's this moment where they hit that on him. They put Cody Rhodes in the ring. Solo hit a little move on him. One, two, Cody Rhodes barely kicked out. And then Cody Rhodes hit a super Cody cutter from the top rope, kind of almost like a RKO off the top rope is the only way I could describe it. And then the final boss was here. Not The Rock, but the original Tribal Chief. Roman Reigns returned. The pop was insane. When he does his hoo-ah against the ropes, the crowd was so loud. It was amazing. Holy cow, I got goosebumps. I was running around my basement. Lexi was like, Zach, what are you doing? This is just professional wrestling. I said, you don't understand. Acknowledge your Tribal Chief. One's in the air. It was so much fun. Roman Reigns hits a little Superman punch on Solo Sikoa, hits an incredible spear. Cody Rhodes hits one Cody cutter and boom, one, two, three. Cody Rhodes retains. Cinema, pure cinema. It was amazing. SummerSlam 2024 gets a 10 out of 10. It was amazing. One of the best PLEs of the year. Triple H, the booking decisions were on point. Now, as for what's next, obviously Solo Sikoa versus Roman Reigns is going to happen. You're going to have Roman Reigns' old bloodline versus the new bloodline. Cody Rhodes, I mean, I feel like Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa is kind of over. Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns will happen down the line, maybe WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, next year's SummerSlam. That'll happen at some point, but I don't really know who Cody Rhodes could fight next for a feud. I'll be very interested to see about that on Friday Night SmackDown. But SummerSlam was amazing. I encourage you all to go watch it on Peacock. I bought Peacock, by the way. They raised it. They raised it from $6 to $8 a month. What's going on? You're trying to screw me. I'm going to go buy Netflix from now on. Just kidding. Netflix has gotten expensive. I mean, come on. What's been going on with Netflix? That's something all unto itself. And if you like Netflix, if you like pop culture, then you'll love this segment. It's always our second to last segment, our co-main event, our appetizer before our main course. And that is Top 10 New Things in Pop Culture, where we look at top 10 new things posted by Discussing Film and kind of give our thoughts on them. So let's waste no time. Let's get right on into it with the first new thing from the, I don't even know what you want to call it, but Dave Bautista and Jason Momoa's buddy cop action movie The Wrecking Crew is apparently moving forward. The film follows two half-brothers who, after 20 years of bad blood, must work together to unravel the conspiracy behind their father's murder. Yes, count me in. I love Dave Bautista. I mess with a little Jason Momoa. I mean, come on. That sounds like a great plot. I love a little murder mystery. And I'll watch anything with Dave Bautista. I love Bautista from WWE. I love him from Guardians of the Galaxy. I've loved him in almost every film he's been in. He is the man. And honestly, Jason Momoa isn't too bad himself. Number two, Long Legs has somehow managed to earn more than Furiosa domestically at the box office. Furiosa, supposed to be the blockbuster movie of the summer. It fell very short because it's a prequel. I mean, prequel to a movie that didn't need a sequel. That's tough. And as for Long Legs, I'll be getting around to see that once it comes out to DVD on digital. I mean, talk about a scary horror movie. I'm excited to see that. But this honestly doesn't surprise me that much. Furiosa bombed. Long Legs overperformed. That does not surprise me at all. Number three, House of the Dragon will officially end with season four. Season three begins filming in early 2025. Guys, season two of House of the Dragon was awful. Awful. I was not hyped to watch. Like, I mean, I guess the first three or four episodes were good. But I mean, that season finale was so boring, so bland. I was on my phone like the whole time and almost kept looking at him. I'm like, did I miss anything? You know what? And then I was like, you know what? I half watched the whole show. I go on social media. Everyone was like, yeah, that episode sucked. So I was like, oh, I wasn't alone. But I got to wait. It's like, it's all build up. It's all build up. I hate when you do build up with shows. You know what Game of Thrones did up until season seven? And even I thought season seven was pretty good. A little rushed, but I thought season seven was good. Is you had build up, but it could have ended. You know, it could have ended after every episode, and there were cliffhangers. You know, every season felt like it was fulfilled. Like there was more to be had, but it was fulfilled. With House of the Dragon, it just feels like setup to an inevitable outcome. I know. I just don't really feel an emotional attachment to these characters. And now that I know that I've got to freaking watch two more seasons, I mean, kind of pisses me off, if I'm being honest. At number four, Ryan Reynolds reveals there were talks about bringing back Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider for Deadpool and Wolverine. He said, came to a conversation for sure, yeah, but no. It would have been fun to have Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider, but at the same time, I think they kind of want to recast Ghost Rider for this new MCU film saga, and I think bringing back Nicolas Cage would almost just be like a comic relief type of thing. And plus, Deadpool versus Wolverine had enough cameos that were just beautiful, just beautiful. Jenna Ortega is in talks to star alongside Glenn Powell and J.J. Abrams' next film, sources Deadline. Jenna Ortega, Glenn Powell, an amazing duo. My issue with Jenna Ortega is obviously she's attractive. She's one of the hot, not hot as far as looks, but hot as in talent-wise, as in publicity on her when it comes to Hollywood actresses. And they keep pairing her with older men, especially what they just did with the latest movie, gosh, where she was a student and there's a professor flirting with her. And, you know, I hope her and Glenn Powell are almost like a sister and brother duo, or even just like friends, you know. I just, you know, I understand Jenna Ortega is a woman now, but it's just kind of weird to see her getting in relationships with older men. But you know what? I love Turn Wednesday. I like Glenn Powell in a lot of his films. I'm sure that will be a banger of a movie. Coming in at number six, Sean Levy says that they told Wesley Snipes that his appearance in Deadpool and Wolverine would be out of respect for his legacy as Blade. Ryan said Blade never really got that legacy moment, and I think people don't even realize how much they miss Wesley Snipes as Blade until they see him. Let's give them that feeling. I completely love that they did that because he was amazing in Deadpool and Wolverine. Spoiler. Deadpool and Wolverine was just overall an amazing film. I cannot wait to re-see that film. Whenever it comes out, I might buy it on DVD just to freaking do it. It was brilliant, and they keep revealing behind-the-scenes films from it and photos, and it makes you want to watch it even more. So exciting stuff there. Number seven, first teaser for a Game of Thrones spinoff, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, releasing in 2025 on HBO, came out. It's like a 10-second clip. It looks okay. I'm going to be honest, I'm over all the prequels. I want new stuff. I don't even know if I'm going to watch it. And plus, George R. R. Martin refuses to finish a book he's been working on for over a decade. I'm honestly over this whole Game of Thrones trilogy. But Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, set 100 years before Game of Thrones and 100 years after House of the Dragon, will encounter several members of the Targaryen dynasty along the way. So, interesting stuff all around there. Coming in at number eight, Taskmaster and Ghost will have new costumes in the Thunderbolts movie releasing next year. And this is from trailer footage from San Diego Comic-Con. Look, Taskmaster and Ghost are two of the weakest villains in the MCU. I'm now supposed to buy that they're heroes working for a team. I don't know. I don't really know. They did Taskmaster dirty. They didn't really introduce Ghost well. But getting new suits, I'm happy to see that because their suits are kind of whack, if I'm being honest. Checking in at number 9, I think we're at. I honestly lose count some of these times. Harold and the Purple Crayon opens with $6 million domestically. The film managed to gross lower than the 8th box office weekend for Inside Out 2. Harold and the Purple Crayon was supposed to be like the next big kids movie. And this new movie opened less than Inside Out 2 did after the box office. And by the way, Inside Out 2 is freaking breaking so many records. I think it's almost in the top 10 highest grossing movies of all time, which is pretty absurd if you ask me. I know I'm not a big supporter of it, but I just have no interest in seeing it. And finally, number 10, this is exciting news. Some films releasing in the summer of 2026 currently include, by the way, SummerSlam, two-night event in Minneapolis, excited for that. But the film's releasing, Shrek 5 is coming out. I mean, oh my gosh, I've been waiting so long for another Shrek movie. Toy Story 5, we don't need that. A Moana live action, that feels forced. Avengers Doomsday, that's going to be an amazing film. The Mandalorian and Grogu, that is a film. It's going to be kind of weird. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, and Masters of the Universe live action. I don't care about those last two, but Avengers Doomsday and Shrek 5 are going to be absolutely electric. I'm pumped. I am deadly, deadly pumped for those films. There's a lot of good stuff coming out soon, if I'm being honest. I mean, a lot of good movies, a lot of good UFC events. TV show-wise, I know the Umbrella Academy, their final season's coming out. They also got Stranger Things, as we mentioned. I think they're coming out with, oh gosh, there's so many it's hard to keep up with, but... pop culture will forever have new stuff coming in, coming out. But all the rave right now has been Deadpool and Wolverine, and the hype is real. I encourage you all to go see it. I don't really have time to go and rewatch it, so I'm kind of hoping it comes soon to like Disney or Netflix or whatever. But I just cannot stop thinking about it. I have Bye 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 Instinct stuck in my head, and I found out that the guy who dances like in the opening scene is a guy from TikTok whose agent had him send in a script, and he landed this. It's crazy what the internet can do for you guys. So. That's all we got for pop culture. Let's put a ribbon. Let's put a ribbon on this, guys. Let's go into UFC Fight Night, Sanhagen versus Nurmagomedov, UFC Abu Dhabi. Let's recap all 13 fights, give our thoughts on what's next for some of these guys. It's going to be a good one. Let's do it. Alrighty. Starting off with our first prelim of the night, we had Cedric Dumas versus Dennis Tallulin. And don't get me wrong, there's a reason this was the opening prelim of the night, but nonetheless, I mean, not the most exciting fight. Back and forth, I'll say, but when you're losing a fight and you're landing some big punches and you shoot for a takedown with 10 seconds left, you kind of deserve the hate you get. So Cedric Dumas wins a unanimous decision over Dennis Tallulin, and we did not predict this one correctly. It was 50-50, and we decided to ride with the non-criminal in Dennis Tallulin, but the criminal, Cedric Dumas, who admitted to being in jail 3 weeks before this fight, and I'm still so confused how this guy is allowed to be in the UFC. But I mean, Dumas landed more significant strikes, 49-26. Tallulin landed more total strikes, 183-95. Both men landed 3 takedowns, 2.5 minutes of control time for Tallulin, 6 minutes for Cedric. I mean, Dumas went to grappling in round 1. Tallulin had more total strikes in round 2. I don't even know how round 3. I guess Tallulin might have won. I don't know. Nothing really happened here, but I'll tell you one thing. Dennis Tallulin is unfortunately going to get cut from the UFC due to the fact that he's on a 4-fight losing streak and has gone 1-5 since joining the UFC. So big yikes. Big yikes moment, let me tell you that. But Cedric Dumas gets a win. This will be Cedric Dumas' 10th professional win, and this moves him to 3-2 in the UFC. So... Cedric Dumas, you will remain in the UFC middleweight division. Tallulin, you will unfortunately be sent back to the realm of irrelevancy, unfortunately. Next up on the docket, we had a lightweight matchup between Jai Herbert and Rolando Bedoya, and it was another decision. But thankfully, Jai Herbert got this one done, and I was fairly happy with this. I thought Jai was going to get a knockout in round number 1, landed a knockdown on Bedoya. But other than that, I mean, this is pretty stereotypical fight of Rolando Bedoya just getting outstruck, more power punches going to his opponent. And Rolando Bedoya is unfortunately probably not coming back to the UFC. He went 0-3. In his 3 fights, losing by decision, getting dropped in 2 of them. So unfortunate for Rolando Bedoya. But as for, what's his face? Jai Herbert. He'll stick around in the UFC. I mean, I always knew Jai Herbert was pretty good. He almost knocked out Ia Topuria for goodness sakes. And I mean, come on, that is no easy task to do. But tail of the tape, 2 knockdowns for Jai Herbert, 82 significant strikes, 67 in favor of Jai. Black country banger Herbert. Shame he couldn't get a finish in this one. Shame he couldn't get a finish. I was hoping to see what his current record is, but unfortunately UFC stats is not loading for some reason. Oh, there we go. This is Jai Herbert's first win since July of 2022, so it's been a long time coming. Good job to the Black Country Banger. Lightweight, there's a lot of options. Honestly, there's so many options, I don't even know what you do with Jai Herbert. Next up, women's strawweight. How about a fraud check in our third fight of the evening? And this did not set me out well, going 1-2 on predictions, as Sam Hughes beats Victoria Dudikova in shocking fashion by split decision. And this comes after Victoria Dudikova won round one. I mean, round one, Victoria Dudikova, 1-3 on takedowns, had did get outstruck significantly, 30-25, but wasn't that bad. But after that, I mean, Sam Hughes outstrikes her 41-25, defends 4 of her 5 takedown attempts. Round three, Victoria Dudikova landed 1 takedown, but got outstruck on the feet. So Victoria Dudikova shockingly loses to Sam Hughes in front of her, technically, if you want to call it, home crowd in Abu Dhabi. Is very unfortunate. A young up-and-comer at 25 years old turned away by the 32-year-old from Washington, Sam Hughes. Good win for Sam Hughes, and I mean, significant strikes, 97-61 in favor of Sam Hughes. Her first win of April of 2023. She's gone win-loss since 2022, but she's back in the win column nonetheless. And Dudikova only landed 3 takedowns, which is still pretty good, but when you're not landing control time, it's not going to do it. This will snap her undefeated streak at 8-0. She will now be 8-1. But don't fret. Don't fret, Dudikova. There's always brighter days. And there are brighter days for the next man up on this list, as Guram Kutuladze is finally in the win column. The Georgian Viking getting his first win in, oh my goodness, what was it, 2020 or 2021, the last time Guram Kutuladze got a win professionally in MMA. And nonetheless, in the UFC, this was his fourth fight. October of 2020 was the last time he won. 4 years coming. This was such a feel-good for Guram Kutuladze. And Guram Kutuladze improving to 13-4, snapping a 2-fight losing streak. Such a good win. And he almost got knocked out in round number one. Jordan Vukovic dropping him and having some control time. But after that, Guram said no, landed a takedown in round one, outstruck him 19-15 significantly. Round three, defended 2 of 3 Jordan Vukovic takedowns. 3 minutes of control time. Outstruck him 49-17 in total strikes. Guram Kutuladze back in the win column at lightweight. As for Jordan Vukovic, I mean, he proved he can hang with the elites at lightweight. He's probably going to go to featherweight for his second UFC tenure. Get him in the UFC. I love him. Jai Herbert, Rolando Bedoya. Those are two guys. Those guys could fight. I always like matchmaking people on cards. Jai Herbert versus Guram Kutuladze would be a nice little fun fight right there. And finally, this was the final boring fight of the evening, as we got to Shamil Gaziev versus Dontel Mays at heavyweight. And this would put us at 3-2 on predictions, but unfortunately no finishes through the first 5 fights of the night. Holy cow, Shamil Gaziev just, I don't even know what you want to call this. I didn't watch this, and I'm so glad I didn't. Shamil Gaziev, 31 significant strikes, 27. Total strikes, 8-9-57. 2 of 3 on takedowns. 12 minutes of control time for Shamil Gaziev. A fight's 15 minutes, guys. A fight's 15 minutes. Shamil Gaziev, 4 minutes, 32 seconds in round 1. 3 minutes, 28 seconds in round 2. 3 minutes, 58 seconds in round number 3. Just a control goblin. Just a control goblin is Shamil Gaziev. I mean, had him on the clinch. Landed a takedown in round 1 and 2. I mean, just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. I was literally just watching the highlights, and I'm like, it's just Shamil holding him. That's all he was doing. But do what you got to do, Shamil. You brutally lost to Jerzinho Rozenstruik earlier in the year. 13-1 now professionally. It's what you got to do. It's what you got to do, and it's ugly, and it's not pretty, but you got to win to stay. Okay, you got to win to stay. Dontel Mays has now gone win-loss, win-loss, win-loss since 2021. So this will snap his win over Kyle Machado for a potential win streak. These two are both brutally unranked heavyweights. I don't see the future being bright for either of these gentlemen, although they're kind individuals. We'll give them that. With that, we got to our second last prelim of the night and our first finish of the evening. I did not see this coming as Cal Fernandez. He was a minus 350 favorite, so maybe we should have seen it coming. Gets his fifth career knockout his career. And by the way, his seventh career finish as he knocks out Muhammad Yaha. And with 15 seconds left in round number one, just knocked him down, got on top, started pounding him into the ground. 37 significant strikes to 4 in this fight. And Cal Fernandez back in the win column. Lost his debut in November. Getting back in the win column 9-2 professionally. As for Muhammad Yaha, only his second career loss by knockout. He's now 0-2 in the UFC. He has all the tools. You know, he's so good on the independent circuit, if you will. And he just gets the UFC and just can't do it. I don't know. Some guys just aren't built for the UFC. Muhammad Yaha, unfortunately not one of these guys. Getting into our main event for the prelims. For the prelims, just kidding. Not the real main event. The final prelim of the evening was a light heavyweight matchup between the number 14th ranked Azamat Mirzakhanov and the number 15th ranked Alonzo Menafield. And Azamat Mirzakhanov, my sweet baby boy, gets it done. The 35-year-old is my sweet baby boy from Russia. Gets his 10th career knockout of his undefeated record of 14 wins, 0 losses. Azamat Mirzakhanov now has 12 career finishes. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely brilliant. 14-0 professionally, 4-0 in the UFC as he just dropped Alonzo Menafield with a beautiful cross. Beautiful cross coming across. 3 minutes, 18 seconds in round number two. Landed a couple follow-up punches. Ref was like, that's enough. Alonzo, I'm not letting you take any more damage. Get out of here. So, unfortunately for Alonzo Menafield, this has been the third time that he's been KO'd 2 times in a row now. In 2024, he's been finished. To Carlos Ullberg and to Azamat Mirzakhanov. So to the unranked land goes Alonzo Menafield, but up the rankings goes Azamat Mirzakhanov. You got number 11th ranked Anthony Smith, number 9 ranked Johnny Walker. You got options, okay, if you're Azamat Mirzakhanov. I'm excited to see this guy continue the fight. Big odds at Mirzakhanov fan. And, you know, as I'm not even Alonzo Menafield hater, but it is kind of sad to see him struggling. But $50 extra for Azamat Mirzakhanov. We knew he'd get the knockout here. We called it. Yeah, not a surprise for us here. And with that, we enter the main card 4-3 from the prelims. Little did I know I would go perfect on the main card. 6-0 on my predictions. And we even predicted the correct method for, I believe, 4 of the fights. Kicking off, Joel Alvarez. We knew he'd finish Elvis Brenner. I mean, Joel Alvarez. I mean, Shavkat Rakhmonov, don't get me wrong. Undefeated all finishes. Joel Alvarez, 21-3. All 21 of those wins are by finish. And this one was a brutal TKO performance that night with knees for Joel Alvarez to the head of Elvis Brenner. And this was a back-and-forth fight, but it was a back-and-forth fight in which Joel Alvarez just always had the upper hand. 95 significant strikes to 45, 114 total strikes to 45. Joel defended 5 of Elvis Brenner's takedown attempts. He had one submission attempt. He attempted one little submission. That was in round one. After that, he said, you know what, I'm going to lean on my striking. And he just had him in a clinch in the middle of the ring and just kept headbutting his head. And Elvis Brenner just was like, I'm not going to defend myself. And Joel Alvarez gets it done, getting the win. Happy for him. This will be Joel Alvarez's second straight win. Long time coming. Last fought in July of 2023. Happy for him. And of those 21 finishes, I mean, this is only his fourth career KO. Every other one's a submission, 17 submissions. Elvis Brenner, this is the first time he's ever been finished in his career. And he's now sitting on a 2-fight losing streak. Two sides of a coin, man. Elvis Brenner was looking towards the rankings, 2-fight losing streak. Joel Alvarez looking towards the rankings. Had an amazing call out of Bobby Green, might add. I love that call out. Love that call out by Joel Alvarez. As there's fuzz all over my screen right now. Get out of here, little fuzz. Joel Alvarez, do it versus Bobby Green. I absolutely love that fight. Elvis Brenner, there's tons of unranked lightweights for you to fight. Don't worry. There's a lot of options out there. Don't be sad. Okay. Better days are ahead, Elvis Brenner. But Joel Alvarez, look out for him at lightweight. $50,000 bonus for him as well. With that, we got to our final women's matchup of the evening. We head to the women's strawweight division as Mackenzie Dern, the number 7th ranked woman, took on number 10 ranked woman, Lupi Godinez. And Mackenzie Dern doing what she does best in all areas of a fight. 72 significant strikes to 67, 103 total strikes to 72. 2 of 5 on takedowns for McKenzie, 2 of 3 for Loopy. No real one was able to really get control time, but Mackenzie Dern made it scrappy, won round 1, won a close round 2, might have lost round 3, but did land a takedown, just got it done, wherever it needed to get done. And Mackenzie Dern getting her first win since May of 2023, snapping a 2-fight losing streak. This was a much-needed win for Mackenzie Dern. Happy to see it, 14-5 now, looking upwards in the rankings. As for Loopy Godinez, this is an unfortunate loss for Loopy. 2-fight losing streak now, both of those losses by decision in 2024. But mind you, those losses are now to the number 3 and number 7 women's strawweight. Mackenzie Dern, I think you could rematch her and Yan Chionin. I think you could even have her fight Virna Jandiroba. I think you could have her rematch Lemos, Andrade, Marina Rodriguez above her. There's a lot of options for Mackenzie Dern. As for Loopy Godinez, the exact opposite. There's a lot of people below her. Tabitha Ritchie, Jillian Robertson, Yasmin Lucindo. A lot of women that want to fight up in the rankings. Both of these women are talented, but in a close fight, Mackenzie Dern gets it done, and that did not surprise me. I knew Mackenzie Dern was just more well-rounded for a fight like this. I'll tell you someone who is not well-rounded, and one of my buddies, Ryan, actually my future roommate next year, we're going to have him on the guest on the podcast at some point as a guest, decided to bet against the -560 closing favorite, Michael Chiesa, and he bet on Tony Ferguson, and afterwards I texted him and said, listen to the podcast, you should have known that Tony was not going to win. And did I think it would be this dominant? No. I did not think it would be this dominant, but this fight lasted 3 minutes, 44 seconds. The story of the fight, Tony was landing a couple good shots. Mind you, a couple as in exactly 10. He landed exactly 10 significant strikes. All were pretty good, but he made one little error of letting Michael Chiesa get close. Chiesa was able to land a takedown, take his back, and submit him all in one motion. I mean, it was just brilliant. It was honestly brilliant seeing Michael Chiesa, 36 years old, get his 11th career submission. It was brilliant, okay? And as much as Tony Ferguson is washed, he now has the longest losing streak in UFC history at 8 straight fights of losing. 8 straight fights he has lost. Of those 8 losses, he's been finished 5 times. This was Tony Ferguson's 4th career loss by submission. Just tough. Just tough to see. It really hurts. But picking Michael Chiesa, I knew he'd get it done. And this is Michael Chiesa's first win since 2021 in January. This is a long, long time coming, over 3 years. And it's really good. Really good to see. Really good to see, if I'm being honest. 3-fight losing streak snapped. And he's looking upwards. You know, he wants to fight Colby Covington. I think that's a good fight. There's also a lot of options for Michael Chiesa when it comes to welterweight. You know, you could have him rematch Vicente Luque, you could have him rematch Neil Magny, there's a bunch of other unranked welterweights out there that you could fight. How about Michael Chiesa versus Nick Diaz? That's a realistic fight, if you ask me, but hey, what do you know? Chiesa gets it done. Tony Ferguson, please retire. He actually stole Chiesa's mic time to retire and then only put one glove down and said, I'm half retiring. You're kind of just like, Tony, what are you doing? Just what are you doing? Next fight, though, this was a real interesting one, as Deiveson Figueiredo, the number 6th-ranked bantamweight, beats the number 4-ranked Marlon Vera by unanimous decision. This was crazy. This was absolutely crazy. And by the way, the first man to knock down Marlon Vera is Deiveson Figueiredo. Deiveson Figueiredo back in the win column for the second time this year. Absolutely crazy. 3-fight winning streak since moving up to bantamweight. Perfect 3-0, one at UFC 300, one here. I mean, dude is looming for a title shot. One fight away from a title shot. And Figueiredo, I mean, landed 2 takedowns during the fight. That really is what separated him. But the power looked much more with Figueiredo. I mean, it really definitely did. Landed a knockdown in the 3rd round. Just very impressive. Very impressive from Deiveson Figueiredo. 24-3 now professionally as he beats Marlon Vera. And the fact he knocked him down is what everyone's talking about here. He'll take his number 4 spot in the rankings, which I actually think will be 5, which I'll talk about in a second. But Marlon Vera, 2-fight losing streak, 1-3 in his last 4. You know, he just doesn't learn. Just doesn't learn from. I feel like he just kind of gets worse after every fight. He maneuvered his way to a title shot. He's going to be nowhere near a title shot after this one. I can tell you that one. Never finished still, but no longer is he unknockdownable. So Deiveson Figueiredo, I think him versus Petr Yan for a title shot is what will be in the cards. As for Marlon Vera, I mean, you got a Henry Cejudo fight, rematch Song Yedong, you can maybe rematch Jose Aldo if he wins. I mean, winner of Rob Font and Kyler Phillips. There's a lot of options there. There's a lot of options, but the knight belongs to Deveson Figueiredo. Impressive stuff. You can't really get performance bonuses like that in close fights, but Deveson Figueiredo gets a performance bonus, in my opinion. With that, we get to the co-main event of the evening, and I'm honestly surprised this fight went to distance. It won fight of the night, but Sharmagomedov gets past Michael Olakajacek. Very impressive stuff. Very impressive stuff from Sharmagomedov. Outstrikes him 97-77 significantly, 123-94 total, and survived three takedown attempts. Okay, survived three takedown attempts. So, round one, Shara, 40 significant strikes to the 35. Round two, 35-24, got taken down once. And round three, outstruck Michael 22-18, but did get taken down twice. Towards the end of the round, was able to survive it. Sharmagomedov improving to a perfect 14-0 to 3-0 in the UFC. Two fights now, performance bonuses. Impressive stuff for Sharmagomedov. As for Michael Olakajacek, props to them for taking this fight. He made it a dog fight. But a loss, nonetheless, a loss for the 29-year-old from Poland. And the loss to Michel Pereira was tough. The loss to Kevin Holland was tough. This one gets no better as he now loses to Sharmagomedov. So, Shara, he called out Nick Diaz. That fight makes no sense. Do not have him fight Nick Diaz. How about him versus Chris Curtis? How about him versus Jack Hermanson versus Roman Dolidze? Really like the Roman Dolidze fight. There's a lot of options on what to do with Sharmagomedov, but let's not have him fight 40-something-year-old, probably nearing 50. What's-his-face, Nick Diaz. Michael Olakajacek, 0-3 in 2024. 1-3 in his last four, been finished in three of them. I don't think he's going to be going away, but with a record of 19-9, it's looking kind of bleak. Sharmagomedov, the night belongs to you as far as the middleweight division is concerned. Good stuff there. With that, we get to our main event of the evening as Umar Nurmagomedov took on Corey Sandhagen. And you know what? I called Umar Nurmagomedov winning by decision. Son of a gun. He actually did it. And by the way, outstruck Corey Sandhagen, outgrappled him, outstruck him. He'll take his number two spot in the ranking, and he will get the winner of Sean O'Malley and Merab Dolgushevskiy. That's right. This is your next title shot right here. Umar Nurmagomedov will be fighting for the title. Totals from the fight, 98 significant strikes to 71 in favor of Khabib's protege, Umar Nurmagomedov. I mean, at one point, the fight was close to a minus 2,000 favorite, okay? 123-80 total strikes for Umar. 5 of 13 for 5 minutes and 11 seconds. So, Sandhagen did have some great anti-grappling. Nonetheless, 18-0 now for Umar Nurmagomedov. Lovely. 6-0 in the UFC, too, and very impressive stuff. Biggest win of his career. And how about jumping from unranked Belzat Akhmanov on, like, a month's notice to Corey Sandhagen. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. Wins all five rounds on my scorecard. Sandhagen was able to outstrike him in round one, and that was it. That was it. That's all he could do. That's all he could do. Umar was just in control. Got better with every round, controlling him too. I mean, just impressive stuff. Sandhagen didn't shoot a single takedown until the final round, where he was like, you know what, I'm going to try two takedowns. Yeah, got nowhere with it, but Umar controlled essentially one round on the mat, but those five takedowns added up over the entire T. So, Corey Sandhagen, an unfortunate loss for him. This does snap his little win streak he was on, but I don't think Corey Sandhagen's done in the slightest. Him versus Henry Cejudo would be a fun fight. I mean, you could even do Corey Sandhagen versus Deveson Figueiredo, have him rematch Peter Don. There's a lot of options, but, you know, he's starting to turn into the heavyweight Curtis Blaydes, just not getting knocked out, where he's always going to be that one fight away, and he always loses to the up-and-comer. But great job to Umar Nurmagomedov. Got to give him his props. He's a dog. He gets it done. And the Russians, Khabib's, the Dagestani's takeover of the UFC continues. I mean, Mohamed Moikaev and Tagir Alimbekov, you got two of those buggers at flyweight. Umar Nurmagomedov now in the mix at bantamweight. You got Mozvar Evlov coming up at featherweight. Islam runs lightweight at welterweight. You got Shafkat coming up at middleweight. I mean, you got Khamzat at light heavyweight. Mohamed Akhalayev. I mean, they are taking over the UFC. Grappling is proving to be the strong. Actually, wrestling, I should say. Wrestling and grappling are different. Wrestling is proving to be the strongest style. But that's all I got, ladies and gentlemen, for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. It was an absolute blast. I love recapping UFC events. I love talking about what's next. I love looking at SummerSlam, you know, new pop culture stuff. It's always a blast. Always a great time. So we got big things ahead for the next two episodes of the Surprise Jab Podcast. New surprise guest coming on, maybe a return guest, maybe a new guest. You'll have to tune in to see. So as always, thank you so much for listening. And you already know, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.